Welcome to Ariel Investments Conversation Series for Black History Month. I'm Arielle Patrick, Chief Communications Officer of Ariel. As the first Black-owned investment firm in the United States, we have seen overwhelming evidence that diverse leadership, workforces, and supply chains drive better outcomes for all stakeholders. It also drives better outcomes for shareholders like us. It's no secret that the past 2 years have challenged us as a society. The Black Lives Matter movement reignited a centuries-old dialogue around racial inequality and highlighted the need for urgent action. The COVID-19 pandemic continues to remind us of the fragility of balance sheets and the vulnerability of our communities, especially those of people of color. However, many of today's societal challenges are economic. Now more than ever, the private sector can take a leading role in addressing social issues. 21st century corporate management teams must think holistically about designing their operating environments around diversity, equity, and inclusion to drive change across the globe. To be successful, however, they must also measure it. What gets measured gets done. So how do we measure success? At Ariel, it's with what we call the three P's: people, purchasing, and philanthropy. Each week, we will focus on one of these themes to bring calls to action for diversity, equity, and inclusion to corporations and shareholders alike. These insights will be delivered by legends in these industries. This week, we will talk about people with Nielsen's Chief Diversity Officer, Sandra Sims Williams, Wharton Professor Stephanie Creery, and Ariel's founder, John Rogers. Stephanie, Sandra, John, thank you so much for joining us for this conversation for Black History Month. I'm going to start with a little exercise for our guests, since our audience is already familiar with our founder at Ariel, John Rogers. But Sandra and Stephanie, can you walk us through your day jobs, what you love to do every day, and a figure or figures in Black history who have influenced you the most in your career and life?
Thank you for this opportunity to have time with Stephanie and John in this podcast. I am Sandra Sims Williams. I'm the Chief Diversity Officer for Nielsen, and I lead the development of diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy for this, what we call the newly independent, publicly traded media business. I have been doing this for over 30 years, and I really, really believe in transformation, and that the possibility is there for each and every one of us. As we are a collective in an organization, so too can that be transformed. So I work every day to make sure that that is happening here at Nielsen. But also in my personal life, it is all about working with women and empowering women. And I run a group of young women that I've done for the last 9 years, helping them see their way. People need help and assistance in envisioning what their possibilities can be. So I really enjoy that. Part of working with women, I think about the women from the past who have allowed me to sit here today. And that comes from slavery forward. But the one that comes to mind when you asked me the question was Harriet Tubman, because she was just awesome. And for anyone during that period of time to do what she did is talk about courage. You talk about fight, and you talk about, I am a person, and I am going to do what I think is necessary for my people. And so I follow her.
Thank you, Sandra. Stephanie, can you walk us through your day job at Wharton and a figure in Black history who has influenced you the most?
Absolutely. Great to be here and great to be joining John and Sandra as well. So I am an assistant professor of management at the Wharton School. At the Wharton School, I teach diversity, equity, inclusion classes to both MBA students and undergraduates from Wharton and also from across Penn. My research is focused on identity, diversity, and inclusion in the workplace. And for more than 15 years in both an applied space and also an academic space, I've studied corporate diversity, equity, inclusion practices. So I've enjoyed seeing how corporations have evolved their commitments to their employees and to their broader stakeholders. And certainly at this point, I'm doing a lot of research focused on boards and institutional investors and that relationship and how that's spawning new and impressive and hopeful avenues for diversity work. When I think about Black History Month, I think about where I started as somebody who was very passionate and still is about the arts. And so the figure that I've latched onto for most of my life has been Josephine Baker. And she's somebody who I always admired as a person who thought that many of the things that were happening in our country, in the U.S., were so problematic that she had to leave and go to France. And once she was in France, she was able to get involved in issues related to the Holocaust and became a resistance leader. But she had never lost sight of her American brothers and sisters and even came back to the U.S. to fight for racial justice. And so for me personally, when I think about my continued engagement as a scholar, but also as somebody who's very much interested and engaged in so many aspects of the arts, performing and visual, I always think about somebody like her who definitely became a citizen of the world, but never lost sight of the things that were her home, her true home, and that was the U.S.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the story of Nielsen, which, of course, as John knows, is an aerial portfolio company. What's driving that is innovation in the C-suite and at the board level as it relates to a myriad of issues, one of them being diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, Sandra, you've been doing this for decades, way before it became a trend. And I'm curious, you were recently just appointed chief diversity officer in March of last year. Previously, that role was held by your CEO. So why the shift to make it a standalone role? And how has the company's approach to what the office of the CDO means, how has it shifted? And why is it important and critical to the management team?
Well, first of all, I knew David Kinney before I came. And he's a CEO that I would follow anywhere because he actually gets it. And I think when you talk about DE&I in any organization, if the CEO and the management leadership team does not get it, it's pretty much a waste of time because it's pro forma. And so what? We're doing this. David, actually before I came, David had this title and I actually called him because it's like, what are you doing? I don't understand. Why did you take the title like that? And his answer was this. It was about he has the power to make the change. And that is very true. Him taking the title and actually beginning to show people that there can be change and I am going to lead that change was very important. When I was given this title, it was at the end of him having it, I think a year and a half. We were also splitting the company, and focus needed to be in other places more. Did not mean that he was not going to pay attention to DE&I, but that I needed to pay more attention to the strategy and how we actually execute. And that is a full-time job. So that's how this all came about. But he is no less involved in what we're doing, I can assure you.
So, Stephanie, why is it important that the topic of diversity and inclusion lives and rests in the center of influence of an organization? And how have you seen lack of power and decision-making perhaps hurt an organization when trying to reach its goals as it relates to DEI?
It's a great question. I think the first thing that's important to understand is that when any business-related initiative is not top of mind for leaders, it's easy for them to forget about it. So whether we're talking about diversity, whether we're talking about ESG, whether we're talking about our marketplace, if the people at the top of the organization who have the power and authority to mobilize resources, to create opportunities and structures, to keep initiatives alive, if they are not focused or thinking about the topic, it's not going to live very long. So DEI is one of these topics, right, where historically, if we think about, and Sandra definitely can speak to this more so than I can, but I think in studying corporate DEI practices, you think about the places where it had been relegated for a very long time to someone somewhere who was just trying to help the company stay out of hot water and not become embroiled in a class action lawsuit, right? So that's the history. And so increasingly with the creation of more chief diversity officer posts, it's becoming much, much, much more centralized in organizations. That said, it's still very easy in many organizations for the C-suite to siphon off these responsibilities to someone who doesn't have a lot of power and resources, because not every company grants their chief diversity officers with the power and authority and the resources that they need to get the job done. And so sometimes the chief diversity officer role can be a bit of a smoke and mirrors type of strategy where it looks like it's a chief, but it's really not a chief. And so where diversity is situated, who's paying attention to it, the fact that the whole chief team, all the CXOs, know what's happening with diversity, are fundamentally involved in strategy making, implementation, goal setting, that's really important for diversity to actually begin to permeate, and inclusion and equity, permeate the organization in ways that are being envisioned.
So John, what about the responsibility of the board? You're a board member of several public companies, as well as the shareholders of these companies, in driving change and holding management teams accountable.
I think it's the responsibility of the board. And Stephanie and I have talked a lot about this. We think there's a special responsibility for the minority directors to speak out and fight for social and economic justice in the boardroom. And too infrequently, you know, it just doesn't happen enough. And as you know, we started our Black Corporate Directors Conference roughly 18 years ago, partly to address this problem. And every year at our conference, besides having lots of CEOs and business leaders come, we have what we call our conscience of the conference speak to the group on Friday night. And it's been people like Harry Belafonte, Andy Young, Reverend Jackson, Congressman Lewis, people who actually marched with Dr. King, people who had sacrificed and risked so much to get doors open for us so that we could sit in the boardroom. And just to remind those directors that they have that responsibility to do what John Lewis often talked about. When you see something that's not right, that's not just, you have a responsibility to speak up and speak out, you know, make good trouble in the boardroom. So I think that is something that is just so, so important, that minority directors feel comfortable and get more and more aggressive in pushing for the fairness and economic justice issues that are so important to our community.
That's interesting that you mentioned the Black Corporate Directors Conference. We did a survey recently of attendees of that conference and found that there's still some room to go in terms of DEI being measured and the same rigor being brought to that process as you would anything else, such as a strategic turnaround plan, making sure you meet earnings guidance every quarter. And I'm curious, Sandra, how the average employee plays into this, right? So when we are trying to, as leaders, galvanize employees around DEI as the epicenter of not only its focus in terms of diverse workforces, but also innovating products, client offerings, customer products, so that they serve communities of all types. Is there more education needed to help employees, Black, white, or green, understand the value that diversity brings to their business? How do you approach this, making sure that there's that resource available so that everyone really buys in and doesn't feel that they're just being pressured to do it because it seems like the right thing?
So when I started in DE&I, the one thing that I thought was very important for everyone was to really help define it. Let's not just go do something. Let's define what it is that we are about to venture into. And that means it has to be in alignment with the values of the company, well, what the leadership is going to be held accountable for. The good news is that we do have a board that understands and does support DE&I. And it is also important that when we start to talk about the makeup of the organization in terms of the numbers, again, you must educate people about the numbers. You can throw numbers up on a wall, but does it really tell the full story? And that's why you have to develop a story around the numbers so that people understand when they see them. So this is what it actually means. Now, of course, Nielsen being a measurement company, we definitely are measuring our audiences, but we're also measuring our people internally. And I will say that from the time I've come to this point, people are very much aware of what we look like and where we need to improve, because no, we are certainly not perfect. And we work hard to make sure that we are changing and turning the tide on our numbers.
Stephanie, what Sandra just said reminded me of the fact that I think a lot of people conflate DEI as just this one catchphrase. Diversity, equity, and inclusion are also three different parts of a broader wheel. So how would you define those three words in terms of how companies need to operationalize these things? And where do you think there requires a bit more education beyond just, oh, diversity is great?
So this is also a great question, and I'm going to expand the array of concepts that we're operating with in the DEI space to include diversity, inclusion, belonging, equity, and respect. And in a recent report that I released last year, Improving Workplace Culture Through Evidence-Based Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Practices, we actually define each of these terms and talk a little bit, just a little bit about the evolution of the terms. And I remind people that equity didn't just emerge with the murder of George Floyd. Historically, corporate diversity programs, which were not called this back then, were founded on the notion of equity, right? They're post-1964 civil rights legislation that established in many companies offices that had to ensure that we were upholding the rights of Black people and then subsequently other groups. So the idea that equity is something that has waxed and waned in and out of the equity is out of the lexicon is something I think we have to be very thoughtful about. So equity, when we're talking about equity, we're talking about lots of things. And oftentimes it gets attached to pay equity, equity of opportunity. But we're looking at a notion of fairness. But this notion of fairness is also considering where people start, understanding and recognizing that not everyone starts in the same place. And so you will see lots of information about equity versus equality. But equity is considering the starting places and access to resources and how that shapes people's opportunities. Diversity, we're talking about the numbers and the mix. There are so many ways in which we are talking about diversity now, whether it's racial diversity or gender diversity or you know, neurodiversity is one of the latest ways of talking about diversity. So we're talking about the relative mix of people. And inclusion, I like to talk about inclusion as the behavior, right? The thing that we, whether that's including someone in decision-making, integrating and including differences and different perspectives in how we talk. Historically, people have also talked about sense of inclusion, but I like to talk about that, as do many companies, as belonging. So belonging is about feeling connected to work, feeling part of a community, feeling like one has a place in the organization. That's often what people mean when they say, I feel included here. And then respect is this notion of feeling that people like you, people appreciate what you have to bring, and that your position in the organization, no matter if you're a frontline, not having any P&L responsibilities, not having any direct reports, or whether you're top line, that people honestly think that you are worthy of being listened to. So that's how I think about these concepts broadly. And there was a second part of your question, so I'm going to ask for that again.
You addressed it perfectly, and I want to turn it also to you and Sandra to address, okay, so belonging, that sounds like the hardest part. So, you know, companies are putting diverse talent in these positions, but how do we actually retain them? What are the strategies to ensure that they feel that they belong, that their contributions matter? Maybe I'll start with Sandra, but what are some of these strategies that organizations need to employ beyond the generic employee resource group? To keep these employees engaged and respected?
So when I first started at Nielsen, February, we selected 10 women to attend the Black Enterprise Women of Power Summit. And one of the reasons that I did that, I said I needed some time, because it was my first year, time to hear from them what their experiences are. And this was, of course, the first time anybody bothered to do this kind of programming. It's trying to make sure that you're hearing people for what they are experiencing, so you understand how to then build any kind of programming. Because if I don't know your experience, then I don't know what I should be doing to help you feel like, one, you're included, that you belong, and that we as an organization will nurture your growth so that you want to be here. And so this is, I think, about the seeing and hearing. You have to do that, because I don't know how people actually develop a strategy without knowing what the baseline is for the people inside your organization. And by the way, yeah, you can have, we have BRGs, we have 14 of them. That's nice. But you also need to understand how those BRGs are going to operate within our business, and also help people feel like, hey, we see you. You belong here. These are the people that we are working with on a daily basis. We have white colleagues who did not realize that a Black and Asian or Hispanic person has a different walk in life. So that's the beginning of breaking these walls down so that we understand how each person is showing up here.
So once you've gathered those critical insights by listening, I think that's really important. John, mm-hmm. How do you actually measure the success of these programs, whether it be management incentives or board metrics? What is the reality of your moniker that I absolutely love? What gets measured gets done.
I think that's actually Melody's moniker. She's the one that always talks about that. But I think a couple of things. I think when you're, you know, it is a basic premise we all believe in, that you want to hold senior officers accountable for the diversity of their teams and working with minority-owned businesses and all the D&I efforts and making sure that it really is part of their compensation. I think that's best practice. I know McDonald's is doing that now, and it's been really well received by the senior officers, and we just have to continue to push that out as something that's really basic and important. But I also talk, when I talk to companies, I think also it's very important to have a couple of really senior, diverse, talented people on the management committees, in the leadership ranks of the corporations. Because when you have those leaders, it sends a signal throughout the organization that the company believes in diversity and inclusion. And it's so important that those folks have not only are well respected internally, but are given the freedom from the management to be out building relationships in the broader community, whether it's with the National Urban League or Rainbow Push or National Action Network or supporting historically Black colleges, all those key things. You want to make sure that your senior people of color, and same thing with the Latinx community, same thing with the women's leadership communities, you want to make sure that people are out there taking the great values, for example, that Nielsen has, and spreading them everywhere. And at the same time, those senior executives become a Pied Piper for talent. We know that when Melody Hobson became president of Ariel, many women and women of color said, I want to maybe think about going to Ariel and working with a dynamic leader like Melody. And because she's so visible and so outspoken, she becomes, again, a Pied Piper for talent. So that's what I would like to see as a way to, you measure success when you have someone really in those leadership ranks, and that makes all the difference.
You've all really helped me build a story arc, right? So Sandra talked about listening. Stephanie talked about, and John talked about how you measure the success of these kinds of programs. So Stephanie, once we've listened and measured, how do we actually report? I often see companies looping in their DEI efforts to an annual ESG report. ESG is not the same mm-hmm. thing as DEI. DEI is a distinct part of the broader framework. How frequently should they be reporting on their progress? To whom? Who needs to be brought along? And when is it okay to just say, we haven't met our goals and here's what we're going to do next?
Yeah, let me just say something really quickly about data before I get to the reporting of data, because it's really important that we begin to understand that what we report whether it's good or bad is fundamentally a function of the data that we're collecting. And many companies are still struggling to collect an array of really important diversity-related data. So because, you know, U.S. companies that are federal contractors have to collect the stats on race, gender, so on and so forth, we have some sense of how many people are in which spots. The data aren't always great about helping us to understand how they moved from one spot to the next. So did they participate in a leadership development program? Did they have, were they part of a formal sponsorship program? What was it that was done, the initiative that helped them to move from place to place in the organization? So that requires collecting data on people's participation in all these great, wonderful diversity, equity, inclusion initiatives that companies are creating, and that we don't always have in companies great data on people's participation, the quantity and the quality of it. And so that will make sense for when we're thinking about reporting what we report. Historically, companies that have now in the last 18 months increasingly put out DEI transparency reports, they're reporting how many people are in which spots. But that's not the only question we need to be asking ourselves. As we need to be asking ourselves is, if we invested all this money in these DEI initiatives, to what was the yield? What was their effect? What was their impact? And to report that as well. So the activities, the impact of the activities, not just where people are represented in different levels of leadership in the company. And the last thing I want to say that it's tied to this notion of good data and good reporting is good data analysis. So not everybody has... you know, learned how to effectively analyze corporate DEI data in a way that allows them to make good conclusions. So sometimes it's easy to attribute cause when cause isn't there. Sometimes it's easy to say, well, that's not significant because the stats don't hold up, when the reason why it's not significant is because Black people are underrepresented in the sample and they're never going to show up statistically significantly in the sample. But if you collect qualitative data, do focus groups, you're going to find out some good information. So as you can see, I'm really passionate about data. I am an academic, but I do think it's a full cycle of collection, good analysis, and reporting that's really needed in many companies today.
So Sandra, how does that come to life for you at Nielsen? To whom are you, do you feel an obligation to report on this data? I'm sure there are many stakeholders in that ecosystem for you. And what is the level of frequency that's been most effective?
So I'm going to start at the board level because that's where we start delivering the numbers. And our board, I have to say, I'm quite pleased with the board members and the leaders because they are interested. In fact, I said this just recently, I have never been questioned so much about what we're doing in a board meeting. Our board is really very interested in what we're doing and how we're getting people to be retained and, of course, acquired. So it starts at the board. Then the second year that I was here, we made the decision to absolutely share this, have this transparency across the organization. So twice a year, we share it with the organization so that people can see whether there's progress or not. And if there is not progress, we can also report on that. So this is delivered most of the time by David in a town hall. And people certainly have the option of asking questions in the Q&A. But we want to stay transparent because having people know what we need helps us internally and externally, and transparency with job openings in the organization so that we can move people through the organization. The other piece that no one really talks about a lot is making sure that diverse employees are aware, that they are aware where openings are, that they are prepared to take those positions. And part of the programming has to be about that. We bring in consultants. One program that I've used throughout my career has been called Efficacy by Korn Ferry. And this is about navigating a career. And it's a reality check in that a lot of Hispanic and Black employees have always been told, keep your head down, stay in your lane, and therefore that's what they do. But when you do that, you don't know what's happening around you. You don't know what's happening inside of this company where you want to actually grow. So it's about opening people's eyes, about controlling and navigating their career. These things are very important on both sides of the aisle so that we can change together.
If there's one takeaway, ladies and gentlemen, it's transparency. I think another takeaway from Stephanie here is making sure there's rigor to how you are approaching your data rather than just focusing on reporting it for PR reasons. And from John's perspective, I think what we learned today is that it's also incumbent on the board to actively engage day-to-day, as well as the shareholder community. Thank you so, so much, Stephanie Creary from Wharton, Sandra Sims-Williams from Nielsen, and John Rogers from Ariel.
Thanks so much for listening to our conversation series for Black History Month. And check us out every week this month, or visit our website, ArielInvestments.com, ArielInvestments.com.